to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the bathrooms to my left or your right, and that exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days here tonight? We'd like to welcome you. Anybody on Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Do you have anyone in? At this time, if you would, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The preamble, AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part two. We break it up into multiple parts on some of the steps. Please welcome our panel, Ross and Lynette. I will read the first paragraph, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. And we will be starting step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. All right, on page five, our first discussion tonight, I woke up, this had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I cried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did. And whoever would like to go first? Lynette?
I can go first. Lynette, alcoholic?
Lynette.
Yeah, so reading this, especially like, how did it happen? How did it happen again, right? For me, I've had a couple relapses, right? I got sober originally when I was 16, stayed sober for 9 years, and then I went out drinking for a really long time. And AA was not something I was going to return to ever. And so, because I wasn't powerless over alcohol, I just didn't have enough chance to drink, right? Wasn't my fault. But, when I think about the last time that I relapsed before I came back, I was going to a barbecue. In the middle of a workshop that I like only could dream that I would be a part of, and knowing that there would be alcohol and not planning to drink, but like maybe if there was something else I would do that, but I'm not going to drink. And as soon as I got there, a girl had like a box of Truly iced tea, and she handed me a Truly iced tea, and I was drinking it before I knew it. And I don't even like iced tea, so like why am I relapsing and drinking iced tea? Like, it was insane. And then I'm like, okay, like, and I'm drinking it and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it and I'm like, why am I drinking this? I don't even like this. Like, why? And I didn't put it down. I didn't like, I drank it all. you know? And then this other guy came up with my alcohol of choice and I was like, okay, here we go. Like, I'm good, you know? And continued to drink for another 9 months, still knowing everything that I've learned in this program about being powerless over alcohol, still every day waking up thinking that the rules would be different for me for somehow. And then I could start over and, okay, well, maybe I'll last till 5 p.m. this day, you know? But then that, you know, my brain starts talking to me, that obsession of the mind starts speaking to me and it's like, oh, well, you can stop and just get one bottle. You'll be fine, you know? And then I'm through with the bottle and more. So that's all.
Hi, I'm Ross. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ross.
My sobriety date is January 23rd, 2015. And I do have a home group. It's the We Are Not Saints group off of Shore Drive in Virginia Beach. We meet on Saturdays and Sundays at 6 o'clock. We're a big book study on Saturday and we read out of the 12 and 12, both steps and tradition. If you're in the Shore Drive area, come out and it's pretty easy to get us to go out for ice cream afterwards too. So it's always a good time on Saturday. I can very much relate to Bill Wilson and what he wrote in this particular portion of his story. And my sponsor, I'm reading the notes now that my sponsor had me write when we went through the book. Now, I mean, on the first paragraph, he told me to write down that Bill begins to use willpower. Surely willpower will be Bill's solution to the drinking problem. And I can remember so many times exerting all the will that I had to stop drinking. I like here where he says I had written lots of sweet promises. And I can remember this one time I had this episode where my wife made me promise when I left on Friday night not to drink. She made me promise because she had an important commitment the next day. She said, please don't drink. I've got an important commitment. You've got to be home to care for our 1.5-year-old son. And I said, oh, don't worry about me. I am not drinking tonight. Not at all. That's not in my cards. And you guys know the rest of that story. And what I can tell you is that I didn't come home on Saturday. And I came home on Sunday with a buddy in a taxi cab at about 7:30 in the morning. And the look on her face when she opened that door and here I am with my drunken buddy. And, you know, we hadn't showered in a couple of days and God knows what we had done during that time. And after that incident, I felt terrible. I was completely demoralized. And I said, this has got to stop. I can't live this way anymore. I can't drink. And I'd never been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about the steps. I said, but something has got to change. I'm now come to the point where I realized I can't drink. And I'm now going to use all my willpower to not do it. And I'm also going to write a few sweet promises. So I got pen and paper out and I wrote my wife a letter that says, I've got a problem with alcohol. I can't drink anymore. I'm sorry for the stress this is putting on you and the family. I'm done. But I didn't stop there. I also wrote the same sweet promise to my parents. And I wrote the same sweet promise to my in-laws. And I put these letters in the mail and sent them out. Yes, I think I even sent my wife's in the mail, right? And I live with it. But I meant business. Like I meant business. The look on this woman's face, and I loved my wife and my child at that moment more than anything. And I did not want to damage them. And I didn't want to bring any more damage to my parents. And I didn't want to bring any more damage to my in-laws. And I meant business. And I'm done with this drinking. Done with it. And I started to laugh, just like Bill Wilson does. Started to laugh at the gin mills. And I remember walking around super confident. This thing was nothing. This was nothing. This drinking problem, all this fuss that I was making, all this fuss that my family's making, it's not a big deal at all. I went to a Fish concert with no plans of drinking. I'm up for 4 days. And on the drive back from Asheville, I thought, what the hell am I going to do now? I've written all these sweet letters and I've made all these sweet promises and I can't come home in this shape. What am I going to do? And let me tell you, that allergy had kicked off And I started hiding drinking for the very first time in my life. And now I'm the degenerate that's driving around with vodka stuffed under my seat. I don't smoke cigarettes. I start smoking cigarettes because I knew that if I smoked, my wife wouldn't want to kiss me. So therefore, she wouldn't smell the alcohol on my breath. You know, these are the sick things that are at this point going through my mind. But that's what willpower did for me. Absolutely nothing when it came to the solution for alcoholism. And when my sponsor and I went through this and we wrote this out, and he asked me to start thinking of these examples, how can I relate to Bill Wilson? That's exactly how I related to this particular paragraph. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks for sharing.
Okay, the next part is on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
Wasn't that alcoholic?
Isn't
that? So my sobriety date is November 4th, 2021. This time, my very first sobriety date was January 24th, 1994. So I've had a lot of experience on what not to do, right? And surely thinking that self-knowledge was the answer, right? I wanted to try everything. My mom always said to me growing up, like, why do you always have to do things the hardest way? Like, you always have to choose the hardest option. So even before I found alcohol, you know, I always chose things the hardest way. Like, no, you know, oh, don't touch the stove, it's hot, right? Well, I need to find out, you know. So, you know, when combating liquor, right? I grew up, I was raised Mormon, so I did not have alcohol in like my family parties. Like, it was not something that I was ever around. So I mainly only had this like romanticized version of what drinking was like from television shows and like occasionally when we would go boating, but like it really wasn't anything I had to experience. I definitely thought it was like, I romanticized it. I was like, I want to do that, you know? And I remember the first time I drank, I was 11 and I had gone to my friend's house. And where I was raised, there weren't very many families that did drink, but I became friends with all of the families that did, you know, like there's like 3 kids in my class that parents drank and they were my best friends. And I always had to have sleepovers at their house so that we could, you know, wait till their parents went to sleep and I could ask them to get in their alcohol, you know? And, you know, I remember like, it was like 5th grade and the very first drink I ever took, I was like, holy shit, what is this stuff? This is awesome. You know, I have been missing out. That's why it's on TV. That's why, you know, like, why don't we do this at home? Like, what is going on? Like, you know, and I proceeded to go to my 5th grade program, you know, wasted. Like, I drank my drink and my friend's drink and her sister's drink and everyone's drink. Nobody finished it, but I did. I finished them all and then went to school, you know, and got on the stage and they're like, what's wrong with Lynette? Because, you know, like me being drunk was not even like something that would even enter their mind. You know, it's like, I'm just hyper, you know. So then I definitely am hyper still to this day, but sober or not. Caffeinated is a whole nother story. But I don't know if what that has to do with it, but the self-knowledge is, it gets me into trouble quite frequently. I mean, even to this day, like I turn it over and I wake up and I write back to square one of thinking I know better. You know, I listen to a meditation, and my brain goes off and like, oh, I don't need AA. I can do this. I'll be good. Right. So that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Lynette. Ross again. I do have more writing here that my sponsor had me list in the column to the right. And it says here that Bill understands the problem for the first time. And as I'm looking at Bill's experience, I guess if Bill lived in today's age, this was his first trip to rehab, where he's put in the hospital and he meets the kind doctor who tells him that though he's certainly selfish and foolish, that he's seriously ill, both bodily and mentally. And Bill finally understands the true nature of alcoholism. And quite frankly, I think that he's starting to really figure out the hopelessness of this disease, but it's put to him in a way that he can understand. And I remember the first time that I was approached with the simplicity of what Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me about the disease of alcoholism. And my first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous was my first stint in rehab. Thankfully, it's been my only stint in rehab. And I show up at the door of the Virginia Beach Psych Center. Some of you have probably been paying customers there as well. But I show up on that doorstep and I crawl in. You know, Bill talks about in the paragraph before, the doctor came with a heavy sedative and the next day found him drinking both the gin and the sedative. And, you know, that was me for the last 5 years of my alcoholism. And how I survived that, I'm just not sure. And I crawl in the door of this facility. 36 years old, I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous other than what The Sopranos taught me. But that's it. Like, I don't know anything about what you people are or what you people do. And my second day there was my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And for whatever reason, I still remember it very clearly. And I remember the message that you guys brought, the message of hope, but also what the disease of alcoholism is. And that was the first time that I had anyone explain it to me in a way that made sense. But not only did you tell me about what happens to the alcoholic with the allergy and with the obsession, but you also told me about the way out. And you see, I was hopeless. I had not had an ounce of hope. There was nothing that was working in my life. Not a single thing, not even a fraction of a thing was working in my life at that moment. But here sat across from me, six people with the message contained in this book and a program of action that if I did it, I could have the same things that you guys have. And unlike Bill Wilson, who just didn't have the gift of the fellowship, right? He just had the doctor explain to him what the problem was. The doctor didn't necessarily at this point have the solution. Thankfully for me, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob had figured it out. And here I was some 80 years later with the solution to the problem presented to me. All I had to do was take it. And all I had to do was work it. And I sit before you today because of the solution presented to me, a completely different man. I am not the same person at all that I was on that January 23rd, 2015. I mean, it's a drastic difference. I don't even resemble that person today. And it's because of the actions laid out in this book. Thanks.
Hey, Ross. Okay, the next part on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reason yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
I already talked about that. I have, you know, definitely I've changed sponsors. My first sponsor I went through and had to underline a lot of words and look up their, you know, meanings, because I just assumed that I know what words mean, right, without actually knowing. And you know, it says old threadbare, I have overused, and I did overused, right? Like over and over and over, I would drink and think that it would be different. I would stop drinking, like I stopped drinking hard alcohol and I could only drink wine. If I drank wine, I wouldn't get in trouble, right? Or if it was brown, I couldn't drink it because I would get in trouble. So I would only drink this, you know, and I switched up the rules like so many times thinking that I would be different. But like from the very first time that I drank alcohol, I was different, you know, than all of my friends. They were all like, yeah, like this is cool. But then like they were over it and I'm finishing their drinks, you know, like that allergy kicked in and I was already different from everyone else that I was drinking with the very first time that I drank. The rest of my drinking life, I've tried to prove that fact over and over and over again in every possible way that I could. Different countries, different, you know, like everywhere. Like, and I would move, you know, I'd met my husband in recovery and then he joined the Navy and I, you know, not growing up around alcohol, thinking that like, that was how you drank responsibly, you know? So I was like, I'm not an alcoholic, you know, I'm good. And, you know, we moved every couple of years. So I didn't really have a lot of consequences that followed me because, you know, you live somewhere for 3 years, like how much trouble can you get into? I mean, you can get in a lot of trouble, don't get me wrong. But I also had all these rules that I set in place. You know, I wouldn't drink when I was sad. I wouldn't drink like for this. I mean, I broke them all. I broke all of the rules eventually. But for some reason, it kept me out of trouble for a long time until it didn't. Until all the things that I heard people talking about not wanting to drink and waking up and praying to God that you wouldn't drink came true, you know, and I'm pleading, please don't let me drink, you know, and knowing, but still by the end of the day, I'm drunk again, you know, I'll do it again tomorrow. Tomorrow will be different. And even knowing about the program, having knowledge about the program, and still I'm different. I don't need this, you know, and calling my sister, hey, help me. I need help to stop drinking. So, you know, if fly across the country, stay sober by the grace of God somehow for 2 weeks with her, right? Because she doesn't drink. So it's not really, and we go do fun stuff. And I'm like, I'm good. I'm cured, you know, and I come home and like within a couple of weeks, I'm right back to where I was again, you know, and then finally, for whatever reason, because God came into my life and said, get honest. I asked the right person, the therapist that had no alcohol training that I saw. I asked her for help and I got honest and she told me to go to an AA meeting. No, I don't want to, but I'm glad I'm here now. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for that. Yeah, the suffering and humiliation and not being able to recall with sufficient force. I just mentioned to you all just what the last 5 years of my drinking were like, and it was all suffering. But even before that, I knew that I had a problem. And there was just wasn't so much suffering, but there was just lots of humiliation. Yeah, I humiliated myself time and time again, humiliated my family. That was just the scrapes that I liked to get myself into. And then when it got so bad that the suffering was on top of the humiliation, you know, and I could dry out for a week, I could dry out for a few days. And I don't know about the rest of you guys at the end of your drinking, but man, hangovers just lasted. They lasted forever and they got worse and they got worse and they got worse. And they were just got so bad that I just thought that they would never go away. And they really didn't. I lived in a constant hangover. But if I could just dry up for a few days, right, which was possible at points, I could dry up for a few days, I would always forget. I would always forget that if I drink, and I knew that I was going to get drunk, if I drink, I'm going to be very sick for a long period of time. And if I drink, there's now a high likelihood that I'm also going to significantly embarrass myself and my family. And I just didn't even think about that. It's impossible in this alcoholic mind for me to recall those things. Alcohol always wins. And, you know, I've never been the type of guy that just drinks a couple. You know, from the very first time that I picked up a drink at 15 years old, I was always in it to win. And like you were talking about, Lynette, with the friends, you know, if you didn't have an older brother that could get us beer, if you didn't have parents that didn't mind opening up their liquor cabinet and letting us do whatever the hell we wanted, then I probably wasn't staying at your house. You know, and that was just the way that my mind worked. And it was full throttle with alcohol. And the first time that I put it in me, I said, this is what I want to do. Yeah, I recall a lot of times I say that, yeah, I had this vision of before recovery, that when I took my first drink, you know, that was my first spiritual experience. And then when I took acid for the first time, you know, that was my second spiritual experience. And then when I went to my first fish concert, you know, that was my third spiritual experience. Right. And like, I just wanted more of those things, and I wanted more and more and more. And no matter the trouble that I got into, no matter the pain and the suffering that I was about to get myself into, I still couldn't recall it. When it came to, I know this is poison for me, and I know that it's going to do damage, it just wouldn't pop up. So what does Alcoholics Anonymous give me the ability to do? I still come to all these meetings. I'm still very active in service. I still work one-on-one with other alcoholics. That's the answer to remembering. Like, this program is the defense against the first drink. If I start to peel those things away from my life, if I move myself away from the fellowship, if I move myself away from these meetings, if I remove myself from that one-on work with another alcoholic, then guess what probably happens to me? Because I've seen it happen. The book talks about it happening, but I've seen it with my own eyes. What happens is that I forget. And my history tells me that I forget. So today I choose to remain in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't get on the outside. And my sponsor, I like when my sponsor said, Ross, yeah, I get in here and I'm taught not to judge. Stop judging people. But then he says, stick with the winners. So do I have to judge who the winners and the losers are? Like, I'm confused at this point. And he says, Sir Ross, but stick with the winners. And what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous are the winners are the people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous. And today I make the choice to be in it. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay, next part is on page 30, big book. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We're convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
Yeah, so this was a hard couple paragraphs to read after this last relapse, because for me, I had separated from my husband during the pandemic. So we were living in the same house separated while I was drinking. So that was fun. So I was trying to control my drinking in front of watching eyes, right? So like, yeah, that led to the gates of insanity or death for sure. You know, the first mishap was, I was going to go have a bonfire in the backyard, you know, we're going to make s'mores. It was going to be a great time. And you know, I only had a couple beers, a couple muscle relaxers. I'm good. And I decided to light the fire with gasoline. Well, yeah, it didn't turn out well. blew up in my face. All of a sudden, I'm on fire. You know, stop, drop, and roll was now part of my story. And you know, for that was the first, like, you know, Lynette, maybe you don't want to die, right? Like you would think. I did not get sober after that, not even close. It was another like 8 or 9 months. But, you know, like trying to control it right? This was that was like, well, I wasn't drinking like I was when I came back in 2018. I wasn't, because I was drinking all day, all night, all day. Like ever, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I couldn't, you know. So I wasn't. So I'm proving this book right. Like I'm, you know, like I've proved I can control my drinking. Right. But I'm delusional. Right. And I don't even know it. And I'm insane. And my poor children and my, you know, they're like witnessing this. Right. And I was driven to Virginia Beach Psych. but I like got my shit together and acted like I was fine. And I wasn't intoxicated enough that they couldn't like admit me. So like I got out of that one. Whew. Right. I should have gone. I should have gone, but I didn't, you know, because I didn't want to lose control, because I thought I was in control. Like that is the delusion that I live with, is constantly thinking I'm in control of something that I'm not in control of. Mm-hmm. And gosh, that's painful. You know, that's where the incomprehensible demoralization comes in, because I think I've got it. Like, I think I've duped everyone, right? But everybody knows that I'm a shit show. Everyone knows that like I'm drunk and like blacked out. And, you know, I didn't even know that I actually blacked out while I was drinking until I was making amends to my daughter. And I apologized for passing out on Christmas Day. She said, "You didn't pass out, Mom." And I didn't know that. Sorry, I always cry. That's the incomprehensible demoralization. Those are the moments that I have to remember when my brain tells me I can drink responsibly, you know, because it does all the time. You know, I mean, I know better, but I do things the hard way. Like my mom said, I still haven't learned, right? Like I have to do things the hard way. And this book teaches me I don't if I listen to it, right? And this program and the people in this program give me warnings. I don't always listen. I definitely don't always listen. I consistently find reasons to like get myself away from the program. But the book has always brought me back, because I can't argue with it when I read myself, right? And personality of the book isn't apparently offensive to me, so I'm gonna continue keep coming back so that I don't have to be pitiful and demoralize myself anymore, you know, by trying to prove that I can drink responsibly.
Thanks.
All right, what got me as we were reading this here was the countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that someday I will be able to control my drinking is my greatest obsession. And it's one that every abnormal drinker has. And, you know, when I tried to control my drinking, which I tried many times, I was miserable. Like controlled drinking is not a game that I like to play. And when I'm not controlling my drinking, I am definitely out of control. Not only is the drinking out of control, but I am out of control. And it's this, it's this conundrum, you know, and I've got no way of figuring that out. And that becomes very evident to me over the course of my drinking career. Now I do take exception a little bit here, because I liked being the alcoholic. I'm that alcoholic. You know, I liked being the little guy that could drink more than the big guy. You know, I love to drink myself under the table and be around the group of guys and gals that also are drinking themselves under the table. I laughed at this little lady in my home group, because we share an opposite experience. And we got sobered about the same time. And she said that she was so embarrassed on recycle day, because the recycle guy would come and he'd pick up the thing and she'd run from that. And, you know, when he'd dump it out, you know, all of her wine bottles would clang. I stood out there and listened to it. And like, you know, I'd wave to my neighbor, like, that is what I'm doing over here. You know, I took pride in that kind of drinking. You know, but when I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it was what Bill talked about there. Again, you know, my experience, my last 5 years were mixing the alcohol with the heavy sedatives. And, you know, you want to talk about the demoralization and just the constant sickness that surrounded, you know, not only me, but all of my loved ones. I come in here, it's not that I don't even want to control my drinking. Like, I just can't stop drinking. Yeah, you know, I have to put it to my lips and I'm scared not to. And the reason that I'm scared not to is because I've got all this anxiety and I've got all this physical pain that if I'm not medicating myself, then I'm going to get sick and I'm going to feel like dying. So drinking for me at the end, and you know, if you're not there yet, and this is just the way that alcoholism takes it in my experience, and that's where I get at the end. And I just don't want to drink anymore, but I have to. So I get in here and I learn, you know, it says on the, in the, I got it circled here, that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we are alcoholics. This is the first step of recovery. So what does Alcoholics Anonymous teach me about what an alcoholic is? And it's very simple. Me as an alcoholic, if I put one drink in my body, I'm not going to be able to stop. The other characteristic, a characteristic of an alcoholic is that when things are going wrong in my life, all that I can think about is a drink because that's what's going to solve it. That's never going to get better. I will never recover from that. That is always going to be the person that I am. It's almost in my DNA. There is a solution to recovery as long as I take the action. But I've got to concede to my innermost selves to my innermost self. And for me, I'm just extremely grateful for that point of despair that I was in. You know, I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous like, oh, am I? You know, there was no doubt about it in the misery that I was in, that my life was unmanageable and normal human beings don't live the way that I'm living. So it was smacking me right in the face that I'm an alcoholic. So, you know, the first step, the delusion, like I there was no delusion for me. You know, it was very clear in this book and in the message that you all presented and the way that you spoke to me that I was an alcoholic. For me, it was just, am I ready to work the rest of the steps? Am I ready to do the work that you guys tell me that I have to do in order to recover from this thing? And the answer was, hell yes, I am ready for that because anything is better than the way that I am right now. Give me what you've
Thank you. Okay, we're moving on. The next reading will come from page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that happened and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
Yeah, wasn't it crushing? Oh, it hurt so bad, you know, for sure. Because I didn't want to come back to this program. I don't like being told what to do. I don't like following rules. I don't like any of that. You know, and I got put in rehab when I was 16. So I always had this like narrative, like, oh, I was just like causing too much trouble in my family. Not because I was causing too much trouble, right? It was always like not taking responsibility for the facts of how I actually am versus like, what story I told myself to justify my behavior. It was consistently putting it off on other people. And, you know, that strange mental blank spots, those strange mental blank spots of all of the times and all of the horrible experiences and all of the mistakes, forgetting those in just a few moments, you know, and going to the barbecue and like, sure, I'll take an iced tea. Why not? I don't, you know, even after like coming back and working all the steps, right? And like making that amends, that the amends that I made to my daughter was back in 2019. I still went out and relapsed. Like those things, like that knowledge of knowing like what I'm capable of doing when I'm drunk. And knowing that I'm, you know, hurt everyone around me and that, you know, I can die from this disease does not keep me from taking that drink. It doesn't, you know? And the only thing that's going to keep me from that is God, really, you know? And where do I find God? And the fact that I'm even saying God, because I was so bitterly pissed off at that word, especially, you know, coming back from, like, you know, in Utah, that's where I'm from. That's where I got sober the first time. We didn't say God, we said higher power, right? Because we didn't want to offend the newcomers. So when I came back and I came to meetings in Virginia and people are saying God, I was offended. How dare you? You're going to scare off the newcomer, right? Like, you know, I'm comparing like the way that obviously didn't work, because that was like, you know, 20 years ago, Lynette, you just spent like 15 years, like, you know, getting drunk. So why are you comparing something to, it doesn't matter, right? You're here now. Everyone does everything different. But the book's the same, right? And I'm not offended by the word God anymore. God is like saved my life. And if you are new and God offends you, that's okay. I was there too. Keep coming back and it will change, hopefully. I don't know. Shut up now.
Thanks for that.
I like how Fred's story here really mirrors Bill's experience too. You know, we talked earlier tonight and we read earlier tonight in Bill's section in his story in the book, where he talked about, you know, now I've got self-knowledge. Well, surely that'll fix it. And Bill Wilson also had some will and he kind of tried to will through it. And where did he get Bill Wilson? Right back into rehab, right back in front of the good doctor. And the same thing happens to Fred. You know, Fred is delivered the message. He's delivered the message by two guys from Alcoholics Anonymous. And they say, Fred, this is alcoholism. Here is the definition. You may be an alcoholic. And Fred says, no, I don't think I'm so bad as you guys. I don't think I need this whole program that you all have. Surely everything that you've taught me, you know, and the way that I can solve all of my other problems in life, surely I'll leave here and I'll never run into you. We see here that those aren't the solutions. The solutions are an action-based program. And, you know, Fred's story is so true today in Alcoholics Anonymous. Fred's everywhere. Fred comes in here quite often, right? Fred comes into these, and I see it. This is the beautiful thing about the fellowship today is not only do we get to read Fred's story, but we get to see Fred at meetings all over the place. Fred comes in here and he gets better. He goes to some meetings. He gets some knowledge. He gains a little bit of confidence. Maybe even Fred's family's coming back. Maybe Fred's doing a little bit better at his job. But Fred doesn't work the program. Fred stops going to meetings. We don't see Fred for a long time. And when we do, it's exactly like Fred here on page 42. So if you read it down a little further, when he gets back into the hospital, two members of Alcoholics come to see me. And what do? They grin at me. And Fred hates that. Lynette hated it, right? And I tell you what. Being Fred looks awfully hard. I don't have to read about how hard it is. I get to see it. And I've seen so many friends over the years leave. I've seen, so it's heartbreaking. Friends, people that I have built these relationships with, people who I've seen God restore them to the people that they were supposed to be. And they leave. It looks a whole lot harder to come back in here. Fred's right in front of us. And you know what? Fred is a reminder for me of what I am and why this program is so important. I have to keep doing this stuff. If I stop doing this stuff, then I run the risk of this exact same thing happening to me. So, you know, I go over this when I take a sponsee through this, I go through that exact same story. Like, look for Fred in the rooms. He's there. And if you've been around here for a while, you've seen him. It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And God, it looks miserable. Like, I don't know that I've got it in me. Like, I think I know it all already. You know, that's one of my major character defects. Like, I know everything. And man, to humble myself to come back in here a second time, it just looks nearly impossible. It looks so much harder the second. So today it's not a risk I'm willing to take. So I'm sitting right here in this chair talking to you guys about it. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, and our final part tonight comes from page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Power. for sure. That's the only reason I'm here. You know, was God, consistently, higher power, whatever you want to call it, right? That doesn't offend you. That's definitely the only reason that I'm back, because time and time again, when I look back after all the relapses and all the years and all the near, you know, instances of death or stupid decisions that I made, that's the one thing that's been consistent in my life. Even before I started drinking, you know, it's, who would have thought that I would be open to that now? And the only reason I am open to even acknowledging that and not trying to take credit for it is because of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and because my sponsor walked me through and I became open-minded enough to become willing to give credit where credit was due, you know? And being a human being is hard. A lot of the things that we all suffer as humans, they're similar, you know, but with alcoholism, it's another level of insanity. And it's the only thing, you know, God, relying on my higher power as soon as I wake up, you know, that was something new that I had tried, was waking up and immediately saying the third step prayer to keep me sober. And I was so willing to do whatever it took, because I was so in so much pain. I did. And I did get down on my knees. I still don't always get down on my knees, but I did for a very, very long time. And I notice if I don't say the prayer, something's off, you know? And I am starting to realize, when I start saying things, and it's my voice speaking, but it's not me talking, because I don't talk like that. I remember my mom was like, oh, I have this song, and it was a church song. And I was like, no, I don't want to hear your church song. And my voice in my head said, Lynette, shut up and listen to the words of the song. Right. And I was like, okay. And so I listened. I was like, oh, that's a great song. She's really comforted by these words, right? And I was able to not worry about the melody and the tone of voice. And I was able to hear the words of the song and how it brought comfort to my mom. And then it made sense. Oh, this is why she goes to church. Oh, this is why she believes what she believes. This is why she does what she does. Oh, those people in church may have some knowledge, right, that I should be open to and implement in my life, instead of being knowing more and doing better than they, you know, because I'm so successful, right? I have such a great track record, you know? So, why should I listen to people that are successful? They don't know anything. I know everything. So anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Thanks.
All right. Last one here. All right. So if I've taken step one, I've admitted that I'm powerless. And I've admitted that my own willpower against this disease is not enough to recall at certain times the fight against the first drink. And if I've admitted that I'm powerless, then the answer has to be power. And that power can only come from one place. And the rest of this book talks about how to get in contact with that power. And I've got to take action. I can't sit back and just hope that by osmosis, I come in here and I hang out with you guys and the power is just magically bestowed upon me. It's not the way that it works for me. The way that it works for me to access that power is to work steps 2 through 12. Work them thoroughly and then ultimately give it away to the next person who is coming in here powerless and doesn't know what to do. So the rest of the program is outlined in these steps, but to access that power, I've got to take action. And that's why I'm here tonight, taking a little bit of action, getting a little bit closer to that higher power. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you all for sharing. How about at this time, we're going to pass the severed tradition basket. Also, if you want, you can sign up for our email on our website at simpleactions.net. We take PayPal and Venmo. The barcodes are in the baskets. The Severed Tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Severed Tradition is essential at every level at AA of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to keep to help the alcoholic who still suffers. This real one, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Now, at this time, does anybody have any AA related announcements? Okay, thank you, Titi. Anybody else have any announcements? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. All right, thank you. Literature is available. Please see one of the home group members after the meeting. The literature is on the table. If it folds, it's free, and the rest, you can see one of us. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me or Dave's up here. You also could go on info@simpleactions.net and we'll reply back to you. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside the door. Stay away from the church as best you can. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, again, at simpleactions.net. We also have the meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for a fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, and it'll be held at Stella's down Colonial, down by Bank of America. One more thing. Let's thank our panel again. And we have a great way to close the meeting if you would join. Who brought us here? Who are in heaven? Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Sustain our kingdom and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory forever and ever.